Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and after this episode, kind of glad I don't drink.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad a little bit about it. Also joining us today is Andrew Bloom from theandrewblog.net. Welcome, Andrew, to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, and may I just say, you'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
Always appreciated. I first saw Andrew's writing. I don't know how I stumbled upon your article about the future of the show. I think it was titled "The Simpsons Will Never End."
The Simpsons may really go on forever.
There you go. Yes, and I thought that was really, really smart writing about the show. I put it on our social media and got in touch with Andrew. I'm glad to have him to discuss this week's episode. Before we get into this week's episode, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. We are only $14 away from doing a Simpsons movie commentary track, which Matt and I are both anxious to do. We'd love to do that. So if you can even contribute just $1, it'll get us closer to that goal. By the time you hear this, our first bonus episode will be live discussing The Simpsons Sing the Blues.
Yay!
Matt didn't like it that much, but it was still fun to listen to it again. Before we continue, just want to give thank yous to our Patreon donors. So far, we have Sean Colon. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
We have John Camp. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Next, we have Mitch Hull. Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you, Mitch.
And lastly, but not leastly, we have Holly. Holly Eleanor. Thank you, Holly.
Dankeschön, Holly.
Oh, see, Holly, you got German. Fancy.
Man who speaks German could possibly be evil.
You don't know Matt. This week's episode is Duffless, episode 9, F14, originally aired February 18th, 1993, written by David M. Stern, directed by Jim Reardon. It was aired during sweeps in February, finished 19th, Nielsen rating 15.2, viewed in 14.2 million homes, highest rating showed Fox that week. The chalkboard gag, goldfish don't bounce. This might be my new favorite so far of all the ones we've seen.
That's pretty good, but I have to take issue with it because I'm pretty sure, depending on the surface you're dropping them onto, goldfish might bounce.
Just a little?
Just a little bit. Not a lot. I mean, not like a super ball. Those things are amazing, but, you know, otherwise.
See, maybe that was Bart's original science fair project.
That's true. That's true.
Do hamsters bounce?
They do.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
I've witnessed it. Best not to discuss it further. The couch gag. Maggie is seated. The rest of the family run past the couch and go over the edge of the film, like, and return back to the couch. So it's a little fourth wall breaking there.
Yeah.
Which
very duck amok.
Yes. I don't think this is the first time a couch gag has done something like this where it's broken the fourth wall. But they're nice. It's a nice one. It's a new one. I always like it when we get the new ones. And not the ones they've reused this episode. Also, guest stars Phil Hartman as Lionel Hutz and Troy McClure. So it's weird saying guest star Phil Hartman when he's in most of these episodes, especially this season. It seems he's all over this. I mean, what we just did Brother from the Same Planet, where he was Tom and
Phil Hartman played Tom Cruise. Yeah, I like that too.
As you say, I feel like there's like nominal guest stars like Phil Hartman and Marsha Wallace and Doris Grau who are like officially guest stars, but they're on the show so much they may as well like be, you know, part of the regular cast essentially.
Yeah. And every time
at the very least be very special guests. I mean,
with very special guest Phil Hartman. The episode begins with Bart having a dream about a science fair, but him as a mad scientist, he has a go-go ray. Which, now that I think about it, is kind of strange for a 10-year-old boy in 1993 to know what, like, all those dances are. It's a little, like, the monkey and was it the Watutsi they were doing? I forget what the names of the gun were.
Those mashed potato, I think.
Yeah, mashed potato. That was also on there. But the Simpsons are kind of, especially this type of, are kind of out of time. So I guess it doesn't matter that much. But we find out Lisa is just saying first place in his ear while he's sleeping, which is
creepy.
Yeah, generally a little upsetting. But I guess I've done just as bad things as a young child to my sister. So
I was going to say, I have to admit that after watching this episode as a kid, I tried to do this exact thing to my little sister and see if it worked. And I don't think it did, but, you know, it's the effort that counts.
Yeah, I don't think that actually works in real life, but, you know, it is. You get A's for effort, right? That's how life works.
It's how we hope.
Absolutely. Yeah, you totally get A's for effort, and people pay you for being nice and all kinds of wonderful things.
We jump to breakfast with the family. Apparently, Matt, you're taking umbrage the fact that Homer likes syrup more than jelly?
Yeah, everyone knows jelly is better. It goes on way more things and tastes much better. Come on now.
I don't know. They're both good. I'm not going to say one's better.
Saying that syrup is better than jelly writ large, or better on pancakes? That's an important distinction.
He says better than jelly. He does not say on pancakes, but he's eating pancakes.
Exactly.
There's the implication, though. Let's really parse this out. It's okay.
Well, if we're going to be delve into minute details about syrup and jelly in The Simpsons, I think this is the time. We have Lisa presenting her science fair project. It is a gigantic tomato, which I don't think anabolic steroids work like that on tomatoes.
Yeah, they definitely do not. But hey.
Yeah, but it is fun that Lisa, like, envisions herself safe. Like, that's what she dreams of, in saving the third world with giant tomatoes. Which, I kind of like it. This is actually, Lisa's a bit vindictive and kind of, you know, angry in this episode, but I still kind of like her characterization. I think it's a lot of fun.
Well, she has reason to be.
Yeah, that's true. Homer, debating between jelly and syrup, we have a conversation with Homer and his brain, which are always delightful.
Time to go to work. Little do they know, I'm ducking out early to take the Duff Brewery tour. Rolling at 9, punch out at 5. That's the plan. They don't suspect a thing. Well, off to the plant, then to the Duff Brewery. Uh-oh. Did I say that or just think it? I gotta think of a lie fast.
Homer, are you going to the Duff Brewery?
So delightful.
I think we've all had that moment when we're not sure what we said or thought something.
Did I?
Pretty sure my wife has it every she talks.
And then we cut to Homer at the plant. He's trying to, apparently the only way to escape the plant during work hours is to, like, an ancient map, that says to go to Sector 7B, in which Homer encounters a spider, a giant spider.
To overcome the spider's curse, simply quote a Bible verse. Thou shalt not go.
Which, you can't necessarily hear that, but he hit it with a rock. That's how Homer defeats the giant spider.
So I have to say, I love the fact that there is, like, a gigantic, mythical-esque spider roaming the halls of the nuclear power plant. But I can't help but wonder if somewhere, like, Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy was watching this episode and going, like, what if I did nothing but that kind of thing?
Well, yeah,
this
will not be the first time that we've gone, hey, it looks like Family Guy stole this piecemeal. Just stole it from the show. But Homer does manage to escape the plant by, I think the plan was for him to leap onto Barney's car that has a mattress on top of it. But he lands on the ground, and it's pretty horrific sounding, actually. Like, he lands, and there's, like, a crack. But I guess Homer's next to invincible, so it doesn't matter.
He's a cartoon. He's invincible. Although it kind of sounds like someone throwing something heavy, like a brick, on top of a small mattress with some Doritos underneath. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, one of the things you don't really think about the show, because it's animated, is that somebody has to make, like, all the sound effects, from, like, the dramatic ones of Homer falling onto concrete to just, like, people walking upstairs and opening doors and things like that.
Yeah, and there's choices in there about how loud do we make this noise? And
how many Doritos do we put under the mattress?
It's very important.
I'm sure that they put one at a time and recorded, like, 20 takes, and someone had to sit there and listen to all of them and go, that one.
At the same time, we're back in the school, and Lisa, I guess, foolishly trusts Bart to just hold her tomato for any length of time, and he sees Skinner bend over to tie his shoelace, and Bart is not one to pass up an opportunity like this, and throws the tomato in. Actually, a pretty good, pretty funny scene, because we get slow motion, like, tomato toss with the juice and pulp from the tomato, like, splattering on everyone. you guys know where that's, like, what is supposed to be, homage to? Where's, what reference is, like, is it a specific reference or is it just a reference to, like, something, some slow motion murder in a lot of movies?
I don't know if there's a specific reference for it. I think there, like, it has the vibe of, like, a war movie in some way, shape, or form, but I think it's, like, a broader pastiche more so than any, like, specific call out to another film or television show.
Yeah, because it's similar to, I mean, Skinner has all the Vietnam flashbacks, and it's kind of similar to, even in our episode we did last week, I Love Lisa, in which he has the Valentine's Day thing, in the, who's Johnny? I forget, who gets murdered on Valentine's Day. But, Lisa, of course, is upset about this. Cut back, Homer, Barney are touring the Duff Brewery, which is kind of interesting because I they do this a lot. The Simpsons do tours of factories. Like we've seen this
because touring factories is awesome. Haven't you ever toured a brewery or a winery?
I have.
A cider mill
or a box factory. What about box factories?
Or a steel mill
or no gay steel mills. Those are where it's at.
Well, that's redundant. Whole industry's gay.
I guess that's fair. But we get the spokesman on the Duff Brewery tour, first giving the disclaimer that there is no strychnine in any of their beer. It's a lie, even though no one who was on the tour has realized it. And we also get a glimpse into the Duff commercials of days gone by, a commercial from the 50s, and a sponsored debate, I guess, between Nixon and Kennedy.
Now, here's one of our favorite Duff beer commercials from the early 1950s.
Only Duff fills your Q zone with pure beer goodness. So drink up, and up, and up! Duff Beer, proud sponsors of Amos and Andy.
We're proud of all of our Duff commercials, but here's a very special one from 1960. Well, I would suggest, Mr. Van Oker, that if you knew the president, that was probably just a facetious remark.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
I would like to take this opportunity to express my fondness for Duff Beer.
I'd also like to express my fondness for that particular beer.
A man never drank a Duff in his life.
I love...
Is this the first time we hear that Kennedy sounds exactly like Mary Quimby?
I think so. I don't think JFK has actually been in the show before this week.
Oh, okay. Just making sure.
I do like this is all like another in the long history of Simpsons and Futurama writers making fun of Nixon.
Well, I love two things about that sequence. One is that Nixon's opening line is, unless I'm mistaken, an actual quote from the 1960 Nixon-Kennedy debates. It's not just, like, the Simpsons guys being ridiculous. But I love that it makes fun of the fact that, like, at the time, the folks who listened to the debate on the radio supposedly thought that, like, Nixon won. But when you see them on television, people thought that Kennedy won because he's this, like, young, boyishly charming guy. And Nixon is, as Zoidberg once put it, a cold, uncomfortable man.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's always I remember from history class is that this is like the birth of handsome politicians winning most of the time because Kennedy is, you know, this charming, handsome dude, and Nixon is like this sweaty, like hunchback who is monstrous. Right?
That's riddled with phlebitis.
Riddled with phlebitis. We see more of the Duff. We get all the flavors. Raspberry Duff.
Lady
Duff is very important. Get those
tartar
ladies. Tartar control Duff. I always worry about my teeth when I'm drinking beer. All the, what is it? Duff Dry, Duff, and Duff Light all come from the same pipe, but no one seems to reference that.
Which is somebody who really loves craft beer. I have to admit, I love that crack at like the Buds and Millers and Coors of the world.
I agree with you in general, but I do think Bud Light tastes more like water than Bud.
That's probably fair. I can agree with that.
I mean, they both taste watery, but not, there's, you know, there's the Bud Light tastes more.
I've heard Bud Light referred to as like barley soda, essentially, which I always thought was an interesting encapsulation of its flavor.
Ugh, that just makes me hate it more just hearing that. Lisa is upset and has gone to Marge to complain about Bart destroying another one of her, one of her projects, something she sunk a lot of time into. But in this, she gets, while talking to Marge, she gets an idea to run a rat through a maze. And then she pictures Bart's head on the rat's body, which I think is a reference to the fly. It certainly seems like, especially the way he kind of, like, whines while he's stuck in the maze.
Help me!
Yeah, there you go. That's it. But then there's a reference to Herman's head in here. And have either of you guys watched Herman's Head?
Nope.
I watched the commercials for it.
Okay.
Does that count?
Sure, for our purposes, it's better than nothing. Lisa's like, oh, yeah, I thought of a joke I saw on Herman's Head. And I see it a lot on the Simpsons news groups that I look at.
So the Herman's Head was basically like the cheesy 90s sitcom precursor to Inside Out that came out this summer. It's basically like this guy goes through random sitcom situations, and then you see like the four facets of his personality inside his head.
Oh, okay.
And
that actually sounds kind of interesting.
The reason it's notable is that Yardley Smith, who plays Lisa, and Hank Azaria, who plays Mo, among others, were both on the show.
Okay. Yeah, because I think that's why it gets mentioned so much on the old alt.tv.simpsons, is because people are like, hey, they're on both things. They're in that and that. We come back
and be able two to actually things. Watch Herman's Head.
Yes, they could. Yes, exactly. They come back to the brewery where Homer and Barney are leaving. Barney refuses to give his keys up, and Homer tries to knock him out, but just succeeds in beating him without knock. Like, he hits him in the head, punches him, hits him with a crowbar, slams his head in a car door.
That really hurts, by the way. In case you guys have never had your head slammed in a car door, it hurts.
Matt, do you need to tell me something? Hey, Melissa not treating you right?
Was a tough group of people, all right?
Oh, marching band, all right. To end the act, they are pulled over by the police, who have a kind of like a sting set up at the roadblock, or whatever you want to call it, at the outside of the brewery.
WXYNZ, now I know my ABCs, won't you come and play with me?
Flawless. We also would have accepted Tell Me What You Think of Me.
Oh, I guess you're free to...
Give him the breathalyzer!
Huh?
You're under arrest.
Don't!
Think I can get this car home?
Sure thing, giant beer!
Ooh, ow! Oh, ow! Mother of mercy! Hey, this is kind of fun! Whee!
Good to know gratuitous explosions were always there.
I know, that's... I love that he explodes.
It's one of my favorite traditions on the show, of things exploding that have no reason to do so.
Anything that touches a tree will explode. Okay, so Homer, this is, I think we're going to talk about this more as we go on in this episode, but getting a DUI then it does not have the same stigma attached to it as it does now. Like,
that's definitely true.
I don't think it bothered me as much as I thought it would, knowing, like, coming back to this episode, because of this episode being a lot more about the general kind of critique about alcohol's presence in general in society, but still Homer does get a DUI. Is that, like, what do you guys think about that?
I mean, I think one of the reasons it doesn't seem as striking is because Homer seems fine, like, right before he's doing his, you know, on one foot, giving the alphabet backwards sort of thing. And so it doesn't, like, strike you as dangerous or perilous as if he's, like, stumbling or slurring or something like that, like the show has shown him doing before.
And does again later on in a much,
yeah,
much not as good episode. Matt, do you not, like, I was worried because this has happened in a couple episodes where, like, most notably in, why can't I think of the name right now? Matt, help me.
I don't know what you're going for here.
When Flanders Failed. That's what, Flanders Failed.
Gotcha.
When going back, it's, Homer's not likable at all in that episode. And I was worried coming back to this that I'd go knowing, you know, having kind of, knowing how dangerous DUIs, drinking while driving, is, and But I still felt empathetic to Homer, and I think a lot of it is what Andrew said, that it seems like he's fine. It's just the breath, and we still don't know what the legal limit is. Springfield, by the way, although it seems like it would be rather high, but who knows. But
it's 0.02, obviously.
Oh, so, okay. You know. Maybe Homer would probably was fine. But Matt, do you still think that you like Homer in this episode? Do you not, that DUI stuff? And
honestly, between the DUI and the obvious all around the time drinking, yes, because it's not really presented in a way that's harming his relationships or endangering anyone. I think we get here that I almost think that this whole traffic stop was more of a convenience to get Homer to stop drinking type thing. And they were kind of showing how that the cops, you know, they use the breathalyzer to trump charges up on people who, you know, they want to arrest. It almost feels like, and that may just be, you know, a plot contrivance, or it could be actual social commentary. I'm not quite sure. But in this particular episode, I feel like Homer is, I don't know if sympathetic would be a good word, but they're not, he doesn't seem malicious in any way. He's not a jerk for no reason. He's just, you know, an average guy who does something he shouldn't be. And okay. This episode is all about him, you know, trying to work on that.
Yeah, I generally agree, but I think that is kind of actually a compliment to this episode, the fact that it can have the first act end with Homer getting arrested and you still, you know, doing something irresponsible and you still root for him.
That's true, but I feel that that's the whole reason they showed him just eating the gummy beers and not actually drinking beer, because they want you to feel like, oh, he kind of got screwed over for doing something that's not super bad, whereas Barney obviously is the drunk.
Yeah, and I hadn't really put two and two together with the sort of trumped up breathalyzer thing, but I guess it does sort of feel that way, because he can, you know, stand on one leg and say the alphabet completely. I don't. It's sort of strange in retrospect, thinking if they were kind of making a dig at the use of breathalyzers. Or I think the more likely response is, like you said, they needed some plot contrivance to prompt Homer to give up beer, and this worked.
So Matt, what happens at the beginning of Act Two?
Okay, when we come back, we immediately see the wonderful Police Chief Wiggum giving Marge a call to let her know about Homer.
Hello? Yeah, Mrs. Simpson, I have some bad news. Your husband was found DOA.
Oh my God, he's dead?
Oh wait, I mean DWI. I always get those two mixed up.
My name is Mrs. Phillips. You said my husband is DWI?
Why don't you talk to that officer over there? I'm going out to lunch.
Oh, Clancy. That's terrible.
Poor woman.
Luckily for Marge, though. Well, after that nice little exchange, we see Lionel Hutz talking to Homer through the bars of the jail, telling him that, oh, this will be easy. We'll get the charges dropped. No problem. And then we see, you know, a guard banging on the bars saying, and we realize that Hutz is in jail in the cell next to Homer. So not likely that things are going to go over well for him. We also, then things proceed exactly in that manner. The judge immediately suspends Homer's license. And after Homer, for some reason, asked that be stricken from the record, he is denied. and then is it Patty or Selma? Guys, help me out there. It revokes his license. That's Patty, right? With the round hair.
Patty's the one with the round hair, yes.
Okay, so Patty suspends his license. Of course, she finds it almost orgasmic, which is actually a good precursor to Homer versus Patty and Selma, which we'll get to fairly soon, I think, when something similar happens. We then get to see Lisa attempting to find the hamster for her new science project.
I want the most intelligent hamster you've got.
Okay. This little guy writes mysteries under the name of J.D. McGregor.
How can a hamster write mysteries?
Well, he gets the ending first, then he works backward.
Oh, come on.
Look, kid, just take him before his mother eats him, all right?
I love that clip. Certainly for the best smart-ass response ever. Oh, he gets the ending first and works backwards.
Well, I mean, that's... Have you ever tried to write a mystery, Matt? That's the best way.
No, but I assume it goes like that. It's just a great
it's
response
not really
to
answering
how the hamster
question.
Right. Yeah.
I have to say, Sarcastic Man or Wise Guy, he's got different names, but that recurring character, I think he's one of the best, like, tertiary Simpsons characters out there, and there's a lot of good ones.
I feel like he's the Simpsons writers. It's like, hey, this one time this guy said something to me, and this is what I wanted to say back, and they write it down and keep it until they can put it into the show in that guy's mouth. But after that little exchange, Lisa gets her hamster, takes him home, and, oh crap, my browser. Sorry. takes him home. And then we see Homer on the way to work the next day. And we see him behind the wheel of a car. But, oh, nope, turns out he's riding a bike, which appears to be a young girl's bike because it is pink. It has a basket, a bell, and tassels. So I guess he's riding Lisa's bike. And, of course, Homer is a little embarrassed at this at first. But luckily, he finds the bell and is happy. Once he finds that, that completely works for him. We then see Lisa writing her notebook, I don't really kind of call it the hypothesis of her experiments, more the experiment design. She asks, is her brother dumber than a hamster? Which again, generally science fair experiments have a hypothesis where you would say yes or no and weigh in with the evidence, but we'll let Lisa, she's only in second grade. It's okay. We then see her setting up these experiments, where she actually apparently has made a small replica of the Simpsons living room, with the bookshelf and the tan table and the sofa. And she puts a pellet of hamster food out of reach and the hamster very immediately finds the way to it. And then Bart attempts to do the same thing with a cupcake and fails miserably, knocking the bookshelf over onto himself and having Santa's little helper get the cupcake. So
I want to ask you guys, what do you think of sort of Lisa's kind of vindictive side in this storyline?
I like it a lot.
Creative. Yeah.
I mean, we've gone on record. I think both of us are, of all the core family members, Lisa is our favorite.
Agreed.
There you go. I can speak for Matt and I. We were both, you know, nerdy kids, and Lisa definitely fits the bill. And seeing her, she's often like the very moralistic or ethical kind of viewpoint into the family. Like, you know, when it's Homer versus Lisa in the eighth commandment, and or Lisa
the 13th commandment, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. How many?
It's a good thing you didn't come up against that spider.
How many are there? I went to Christian school for like 7 years, actually, so
I have no idea what they are.
Yeah. And Lisa the vegetarian, like, it's very much like she's the ethical voice, and also often an opposition to Homer, of course, but in this you kind of see her more like fully formed in that she is an 8-year-old girl, and too often Bart ruins things for her with no forethought at all. It's just his, like, you know, instincts of just ruining things as a 10-year-old crazy child. And seeing her just kind of go into that a little bit and being vindictive and being, I even pulled a clip later that's actually pretty, like, perfect evidence of her. This is just revenge and spite. But showing her just as, like, this angelic, perfect little girl isn't honest. And showing her as a full person who does get angry, I always like it. Like in Summer 4'2". Also,
yeah.
Another example of her being angry at Bart, and for good reason.
That's true. It's like a couple episodes ago when she was calling the Corey hotline, it shows her as a little girl. I really like her in this episode because it shows Lisa is a human being with human feelings. But when somebody like that is smart, it's even better because she gets revenge in the most creative, fun ways. It's a great idea. It's what leads to Lisa being a great character. She's not one or the other. She's the perfect mix of the two.
I definitely agree. I like seeing a sort of more human side of her who is willing to concoct elaborate schemes to get back at her brother and, you know, occasionally ask her mother for licorice candy after she's just told Marge she's the greatest. It brings her back down to earth than for just being the voice of reason or contrition on the show.
Absolutely. As for a second experiment, in Bart versus the hamster, we see, the pellet being electrified, and, the hamster apparently learns the first try, go away. I love Lisa's commentary here. The hamster has learned, beware the hand of man. So
very
looking
grandiose.
At the hamster. Oh, it is, but, you know, it's Lisa. She can be grandiose about things like that. It's the only opportunity in her life to be grandiose because no one in her family would actually care about that statement.
And apparently the animators did not want to show the little hamster getting electrocuted.
Aww.
But they had to do it to kind of contrast it with Bart, so.
That's true. It's more fun to draw Bart being electrocuted, which is exactly what happens. But unlike the hamster, Bart continually goes back and forth. Even though he's human and can see the wires going to the cupcake, he continually touches the cupcake, which, just so you guys know, it's not how electricity works. You wouldn't be shocked just by hooking a battery up to it, but it's still really funny to think about, and it makes me want to try it on my wife.
Are you sure, Matt? You sure electricity doesn't work like that?
I'm pretty sure, but maybe
there's only one way to find
cupcake?
Out.
You can't electrocute
exactly.
Cupcakes? No, maybe it has it's a tinfoil wrapper.
maybe that is it. Okay, that would probably be worth
it. There you go.
Although if it was like a 9-volt battery, you still wouldn't feel much. Anyway, so at this point, we are at Hamster 2, Bart 0, and I'm sure there were many more experiments after that. But from here, we cut to Homer going through alcoholism training or...
traffic school.
He's not an alcoholic. Traffic school, there you go, for DUIs, where, of course, it's being run by Police Chief Wiggum, who apparently doesn't have anything better to do with his time, because this is a small town, and confuses his home movies with the educational film, which is him
being
in a pool.
Being a jerk to his wife.
Also that, yes.
And this is the first time we see his Sarah Wiggum. This is the first appearance.
Wow.
Yep, and she looks just like Ralph. Surprise.
There you go, yeah. Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that we get the first connection from Ralph to Chief Wiggum, and then right after we get, hey, a mother.
Yeah. But then once they get through that, we get on to the actual educational film about drunk driving that is hosted by a good friend of ours.
What a terrible waste. Hi, I'm actor Troy McClure. You might remember me from such driver's ed films as Alice's Adventures Through the Windshield Glass and The Decapitation of Larry Leadfoot. For the next 60 minutes, we'll be seeing actual film of car crash victims.
Sorry, I originally captured a much longer clip that then had the wonderful cartoon sound effects and the images of the people puking in the glass because it was so gross and disgusting. And, of course, Homer is the entire time laughing because he is a terrible human being, as we've come to find out.
Yeah, that's...
This
is the one scene that I felt that unlikability rise a little bit, just because Homer is such this seems very contrary to what the rest of this episode is, in that it humanizes Homer a lot in his struggle to, not drink for a month. But this is very much like, look at Homer. He's not human. He's looking at monstrous car accidents and people disfigured or dead. And he laughs. It's just, it's funny.
It's funny because I don't know him.
Yes, exactly. Which, it's just, it kind of stood out to me as being a little bit contrary to what they're going for, it seems. I felt pity for Homer most of this time. I felt empathy. Except for here.
At this point, you're just like, all right, Homer, you're a jerk. You deserve this.
Yeah, but.
Well, I have to say, I think probably the funniest moment in the episode for me is Troy McClure's, transition from, what an awful waste, to then just his, usual chipper introduction without any, real pause in between.
He's an actor. He can turn on and off like a light switch. But after the film, we see Homer going to the Alcanon meeting, which is apparently what they called AA back then. I don't know why it's changed, but apparently it has.
I think they use Alcanon so they don't. I think AA might be copyrighted or trademarked, or they don't want to have.
Ah, that makes sense.
They don't want to get it. They want to allude to it without actually using it.
Fair enough. We get to see a great joke with after Homer heads off with Jasper, who claims to be there for microwave cookery, but then remembers, oh, that's right, I'm here for coping with senility, which is a great class, I guess, and one that people should probably be required to take a little more. But at the AA meeting, we see that Ned is there, and do you guys remember how many days it's been since he had his last drink? It wasn't 11 years worth of days?
4,000 days.
Oh, my gosh.
They actually, yeah. I'm going to bring it up again in the news group.
Okay.
So
apparently he had a little bit of blackberry schnapps and called Ann Landers a boring old biddy.
Well.
Which is just, wow, Ned, how could you? How could you, you monster of a man?
Not inaccurate.
We also see Hans Moleman is there at AA. And we actually learn his age. He is younger than Homer. He is 31. I believe this is the first time we see his age.
I feel like they're pretty inconsistent with it, because I think there's definitely times when he's at Springfield Retirement Castle and things like that, but I don't,
Yeah.
Hans Moleman he's one of the characters that just constantly is, there's no canon or continuity. He just kind of is whatever they want him to be at any given time.
I mean, considering he's died and come back to life several times, I suppose I probably shouldn't quibble about how old he is in terms of continuity.
Yeah. Oh, but at this, Homer gets scared and runs away from the meeting because
they told him they told him that he would never drink again. Which
that's right, and Homer is terrified of that.
Yeah,
we then see Homer and Marge getting ready for bed, And Homer is brushing his teeth and doing all the usual stuff while Marge is in bed with a magazine, is surreptitiously, at least, you know, Homer doesn't notice, giving him a quiz on alcoholism, where she asks him some questions about, you know, do you ever drink alone? Do you hide beer around the house? Which we are in. Yes, absolutely. He hides it behind the toilet, which is not super gross, but I don't think that beer is very cold. It just seems a little weird.
I think it's a little British gross.
Beer. It is a little gross. I mean, it is contained. It's not, there's no transfer, but still next to the toilet. Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah.
I agree. All those questions are good things. Not like you should not be hiding beer. You shouldn't be drinking alone too much. But the question, do you drink to escape from reality? I'm like, isn't that what everyone drinks for? Isn't that right? What alcohol is for? You want to get away from life?
Extent.
I guess that's fair. I don't envision myself a giant muscle man when I'm drinking, but.
No,
you don't have
no,
to, because you are
no,
a giant
you'd have
muscle
to be
man.
Crazy to do something like that every day.
Yeah, every day, especially every day. At 8 a.m.
Yes, 8 a.m. If you don't have your 8 a.m. drunk, you're just no good at the office.
Morning shower beers, that's the way. That's how I get through the day.
But once Marge is done giving him that quiz, she asks him to do her a favor and give up beer for a month. And Homer, not missing a beat. Like, I don't even know how Homer could ever be this smart. And he says, all right, no deer for a month. Which Marge catches and says, did you say beer or deer? And Homer, being caught, admits it and says, all right, fine, no beer for a month. Then they turn out the lights and Homer cracks a cold one.
Yeah, I do. I do like that. That's really good.
I also like the cover of the his attempt to cover it up by saying that the opening of the can was him going, psst, I love you.
Yep. And with that, we go to commercial.
Yeah, when we come back, Bart is having issues getting cupcakes, apparently. I guess he's been, like, trained now to just unable to touch cupcakes because of his experience with the electricity.
Skinnerized.
Skinnerized, yes.
So this is actually a shot-for-shot reference to a scene from A Clockwork Orange. So I don't know if you guys have this experience, but I watch old movies or classic movies and then go, oh my God, when I realize that something from The Simpsons was like just completely shot for shot taken from classic film.
Absolutely. I do that all the time, especially with old music, because my wife is more of a music fan than I am, and she likes to listen to classic rock on occasion. I'm like, oh, I've heard this song before. It was on The Simpsons.
Well, yeah. So like in A Clockwork Orange, the main character goes through some like operant conditioning and to keep him from a life of crime, and in place of the cupcakes, I don't know, this is a family podcast, is a woman's bosom that he is attempting to grasp and cannot muster the strength of the will after his conditioning, and then collapses on the floor.
Yeah, this is a Christian podcast, Ange.
Yeah, there it is.
I don't know if you
I need to go then.
I don't know if you ever listened to Professor Blastoff with Tig Notaro, her podcast.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. They call it. They just don't want people cursing as much, so they don't have to put explicit on the. And that is basically our tenet as well. We don't want to have to put explicit on our Simpsons podcast on iTunes. So
that makes sense. We
say words that are on the show. So you can say you can say ass because Simpsons say the word ass.
Well, I have to admit, I started saying the word sucks after listening to the podcast because I know that nobody says that on TV.
That's definitely true. I never, until that episode, I never used the word sucks, but after that, it was every other word.
We get Homer singing a tune to Frank Sinatra's song When I Was 17, but his is about beer and Queen, so I agree with it, all of it, 100%.
Well, beer, we've had some great times. When I was 17, I drank some very good beer. I drank some very good beer I purchased with a fake ID. My name was Brian McKee. I stayed up listening to Queen when I was 17.
Yeah, he had me with Queen. I was all on board with that one. Official, I do want to correct myself. It Was a Very Good Year is the official name of the song, but the song itself has various years in it. Bart finds Lisa's notebook, all her, she's not very good at hiding it though. She puts it, has it just right out on her desk. I mean, if I was performing science experiments on my sibling, I would try and hide the notebook a little bit better.
What are the chances Bart would willingly read something?
Also, it has his name on it.
That's a good point.
It has his name. Anything with your name on it, you're just, you know, right to it.
Fair.
He tries to hide it, and she finds it in, like, literally 6 seconds. It's so good. He tries to Bond villain her. It does not work. We go to the science fair. I love everything at the science fair. It's the best. this is like an 8 second clip, but I had to pull it. It's Milhouse at the science fair.
Behold gravity in all its glory!
Pretty lame, Milhouse.
Milhouse and his slinky. It's so good. We get, what is the name of that kid with the volcano in his dad? Did they ever name that kid?
I don't think so.
He's not a regular, is he?
I think you see him in the background from time to time, but not. That's why I'm not sure if they have ever actually named him. We have Martin actually has a real hot air balloon, apparently, inside the school. I don't.
Obviously. I mean, where else are you going to do that?
Yeah. Nelson shoots it out with his. It seems like is it a BB gun or is it just like a gun? Because it blows a gigantic hole in that hot air balloon.
It may be a pellet gun, but maybe it's like a .22. But
it's part of like a squirrel hunting thing, so I presume it's like BB pellet gun type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because Nelson has his own science project with just shooting squirrels. we also see that Bart has stolen Lisa's thunder at the last minute, with stolen her hamster and has put it in a plane. And that is his project, is can hamsters fly planes? And it is wearing like little tiny goggles and a scarf. And
I just loved Skinner's comment of like, oh, every scientist is half P.F. Skinner and half P.T. Barnum, which is great.
I'm not sure if that's true. I think most... No,
I'm pretty sure adding any bit of P.T. Barnum is not a good idea to add to a scientist, but hey.
Probably not. But we also finally see Marge seeing that what Lisa's been doing. I just captured this mainly because of what Lisa has in her head.
I don't know if I like you experimenting on your brother.
Please, Mother. It's purely in the interest of science. That'll learn him to bust my tomato.
The impromptu southern accent.
Yes, Lisa saying tomato. That's really, I just wanted that.
I love Lisa's delivery of both the like polite, please, mother, and then just the burst my tomato line. It's good work from Yardley Smith.
That's what he gets. The sequence that ends the show, and it's kind of Homer going, trying to make it through the calendar month. We see a calendar, we see him marking off days, and it's a really great sequence, and it kind of sells the whole show. Like, going, rewatching this, like, going through Act 2, I'm like, wow, I had forgotten that all this stuff happened so late in this episode. Like, I had remembered it happening much earlier, like, all the stuff Homer trying to fight his temptations and all that. But, you know, we see the beer commercial where there's angry feminists protesting something, and dudes just spray beer on them, and they are bikini models.
Just
like in real life. And I what I love, the best things I think about doing this show is watching these episodes and going, wow, that is the same as today. Like, it is, nothing has changed. It's 25 years later. It is literally the same. Or worse in some cases.
How far we haven't come.
I know. You think we progress as a society. I didn't capture it because it's just a baseball announcer. It's Harry Shearer doing a baseball announcer voice. I can't remember the guy. The guy who does the Dodgers. I can't remember his name now. Vin Scully. Yes, he does his Vin Scully. And Homer is the only one at the baseball game not drinking, and he realizes that baseball is boring.
It's a shocker, really.
It's so good. He goes to a Tupperware. Why is he at a Tupperware party? apparently, but
because it's funny.
Otherwise, he'd be at the bar.
I guess that's true. Yes, that's. I guess that's fair. Patty and Selma host Tupperware, or Supperware, as they're called in this episode. But Homer's quote: "I would kill everyone in the room for a drop of sweet, sweet beer."
So I have to ask you guys. I watched most of the show in syndication, so I had syndication cuts. And I'd only seen, like, the Tupperware scene or the volcano scene, like, once before from watching it on DVDs. So, like, did you guys have that experience again where you, like, get little bits of classic Simpsons that you basically hadn't seen before watching them through, you know, non-local affiliate mechanisms?
I've had it a couple times. I've watched the DVDs so many times that a lot of it I've seen just because it was my kind of my go-to, I'm bored, the internet is down thing.
Sure.
But there have been a couple situations where I did not remember it, and I'm not sure if it was just because it was not in syndication or because I just haven't watched the episode very many times. I think the biggest thing was way early on in Homer's Odyssey, where, like, you know, there's a whole there's a whole thing where he's going to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And I did not remember ever seeing that episode in syndication. And apparently it still is, but I just do not recall it. And it probably is because that episode is the worst, probably the worst in the early seasons. It certainly lasts on our list right now. But a lot of it is because I haven't seen these in so long, or a lot of times I put them on and just listen to the commentary without necessarily just watching it directly on. Some of it is kind of new. It feels like it's new because I haven't watched it. Like, just sat down and watched it for a while. I know Matt.
You haven't seen it. It's new to you.
Exactly. I know. Exactly. I think Matt and I are both a little too young to have watched the early seasons when they are fresh. So I think, I know, I remember, I think I pinpointed a point. I forget which episode it was. It was one where Michael Jackson debuted Black and White, his music video. Because I remember watching that live, because I liked Michael Jackson a lot when I was a kid. And I remember going like, oh, cool, I get to watch The Simpsons, and then I get to watch a Michael Jackson, like, premiere music video. So that, I knew I could pinpoint a moment where, like, oh, I was watching this live, even though I still wasn't getting everything out of it, because I was just, like, a kid, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it wasn't until season 9 that I can actually remember watching an episode live. Like, I think I watched it for years before that, but I just sort of, like, didn't understand how television worked and just thought, like, oh yeah, The Simpsons is on every day, and didn't really understand when new episodes aired.
Oh, where were we?
I would have to agree.
Yes, Homer gets kicked out of Alcanon, the last, which is pretty awful. Like, I think this is one of the things that, like, really contributes to this last, maybe even 4 or 5 minutes of the show really kind of nailing home, like, the kind of hypocrisy. I think this is what this episode really does above all else, is kind of show you that hypocrisy of, like, yes, we shame alcoholics, and yet all our culture, like, it just points, like, you look at TV and you go to a sports game, you go to anywhere, and there's alcohol, there's beer, there's advertisements. Like, you're getting pummeled with this, like, the legal narcotic. And, you know, this sequence where he's shamefully admits that he ate dirt. I don't know why. Why is he eating dirt? I don't understand. Like, is it because it's so
beer?
Beer
spilled on the dirt.
Okay.
So
that's what
tastes like beer.
But I mean, he's kicked out of the Alcanon meeting for that. And then we have this dream sequence, which, I wanted to pull because I love these weird sound design things. So here.
Don't think about beer. Don't think about beer. Don't think about beer.
Chugga,
and they do, like, The Simpsons do this so well. Like, I think every time I've encountered this in an episode, I pull it. But, like, showing, like, a character in psychosis, where they're, most recently in Lisa and the Corey Hotline, like, that the sound design with the phone ringing and her going crazy. This is a very similar thing where Homer is trying to kick something, and it's just everywhere, and he can't escape it. And they really design these sequences so well because it is really not, it's designed not to be literal, and it really communicates that he can't escape the beer, like, which is something that's so innocuous, and yet it's kind of foreboding and evil in this scene, especially.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great set piece for showing sort of his inner turmoil without making it, you know, as literal as you might. And it's a good point that, like, how you don't really think about it, but if you step back, it's everywhere, you know? Like, if you were trying to escape it, it would be very, very difficult because it's so omnipresent in our society.
Yeah, Matt has... Yeah,
advertising especially is really bad about that. And not just about alcohol, but about, you know, food and alcohol and basically anything bad for you. It's everywhere. You cannot escape it. And if you try, well, you'll start to realize how, you know, like you said, omnipresent all of those things are.
And then blimps come and drop beer on you.
That's true. If only that would happen, I would quit, you know, eating whatsoever if they would just drop delicious food on me at all times.
It's raining donuts again. No, it's just raining. It's just raining. But the show ends with Homer successfully not drinking for 30 days. Like, we see him succeed. And then he's immediately going to go back to the bar. And Marge is kind of like, come on, you don't have to do it right away. You can, you know, I thought we could go for a bike ride. He's like, no, I want to go to the bar. I want to get drunk. Even, and Homer even says that.
And the bar flies are expecting him.
Yeah, exactly. And he goes
the
back.
The guy who calls him Bill.
He goes back, and this is, it's actually like, maybe, I don't know if the most poignant, but it's sad. And where he kind of sees all the barflies and how, like, kind of awful and sad their lives are. Like, how they just, you know, this is all they do. And he's debating this, and Moe's, like, pleading. And I really like this one.
Come on, Homer. Do it for your old pal, Mosey.
Well, Moe, yesterday you called Homer a worthless sack of...
Pipe down, rub-a-dub.
Oh.
Put it in the fridge, Moe. I've got a date with my wife.
He'll be back, and so will you, and you, and you.
Of course I'll be back. If you didn't close, I'd never leave.
I'm still trying to figure out where Barney gets his booze money from.
Well, doesn't he have like...
Sucking coins out of the love tester machine?
I thought he had like a $9 trillion debt, and Mo had to get it calculated by NASA.
That's right.
Yeah. But then the episode ends with reference to, was it, Butch Cassidy.
Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Raindrops keep falling on my head. They go on a little bike ride. And it kind of is a sweet way to end the episode.
Yeah, I like the way that I think it's one of the sweeter endings the show ever did. And I like that they use Homer's time away from beer to, like, give him a little separation and perspective on it. So that, like, when he goes back, it is kind of striking to him to look at all these people and see them face down in their booze. And it gives him a moment of realization that, you know, does what you can within the confines of a sitcom where everything has to be back to normal by the next episode to sort of make the most of this experience for him.
Yeah, I don't know how to necessarily, like, have to rank this at the end. It's kind of tricky because it is funny, but it's another one of these. It's tackling a very serious kind of subject about alcoholism and how I don't know. It kind of, it's hard for it to. I think it makes as much of a stance as it can, having, you know, like you said, return to that status quo. Matt, where are you on this one? Did you enjoy this?
I actually did. I enjoyed it quite a bit because I feel like it's a good balance between the A and B plots. There are parts, like you said, where Homer is not as sympathetic as he probably could be. I really liked Lisa in this episode and Bart. We didn't get a lot of them, but they were funny. I liked Marge in this episode. I mean, it's a very Homer-focused episode, but I feel like the rest of the family is there just enough to give you a good idea of where they stand on things. I actually would have liked more interaction between Homer and Lisa on this subject, but I guess, you know, they were wrapped up in their own separate stories. But in general, it's really great, and it actually has a little bit of that social commentary on, like, you know, for some people, drinking is this average thing you do every day, but for guys like Homer, it's something they've done since they were a kid just to null their pain. And at the end, we actually see Homer not reform his ways or anything like that, but, you know, he realizes that there is more to his life, especially with his wonderful family. And that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to say about the episode before we move on?
I just say that, like, I think it's very interesting that you sort of don't focus too much on the emotional stakes of the episode. Like, you really just get kind of that moment with Marge and then the moment at the end It sort of is sneaky in its way. You're not necessarily expecting it to be sort of one of the sweeter episodes, and it just sort of bubbles up, and you look back and go like, oh, it was all kind of building to this.
Yeah, it really...
Absolutely.
I really felt like it came together in that last act. Like, all of a sudden, you're like, wow, like, I feel... Like, I understand what it's telling me. Like, it really communicates it efficiently. Like, it all comes together, which I was kind of not expecting after just revisiting it. We will rank it at the end of the show. I am very interested to see where we put it, because I don't know where it's going to go. Let's see. No submissions for this for my favorite episode, but if you have a specific episode that is your favorite, you can email us at simpsonsshowpod@gmail.com and explain why certain episode is your favorite, and I will read it on air. Surprised I haven't gotten any for next week, but maybe you guys will send one in during the week. Next up after that, it is time for comments from the news rope.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments to the news group. I will go through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group that was active at the time from the week or 2 weeks around when this episode premiered and kind of see what people were talking about at the time. Not a bunch from this. I mean, there's always the typical stuff. People are like, where's Springfield? But there has been a guy who's been identifying random cars in episodes. He had trouble with this one, apparently, from all those, you know, the videos from the traffic school. He could not locate those, or Barney's car, for that matter. Then I mentioned this earlier, but how long Ned didn't have drinks for, and it was like 4,000 days, which is like 11 years. This one guy has mentioned, he does this, and he has one comment, and he has two different things in it that I really thought were funny, and it's in hindsight. He's like, if Ned didn't have a drink for 4,000 days, well, that's 11 years. He doesn't seem old enough for that to be consistent with his flashback. As of yet, he doesn't seem that old, but.
Well, I guess doesn't he have, like, his own, I guess we don't necessarily see him drink it, but doesn't he have his own beer tap
in
his basement?
He does. Yep. Which has also been, is also pointed out later on in that thread. So I don't, it's, you know. You know, they did.
I'm starting to think this show may not have perfect continuity. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, that's kind of where the news group is honestly at, where they're like, oh, a lot of this stuff they don't pay attention to necessarily. Even Krusty and his illiteracy is also a big thing.
Yeah, but do we ever see Ned drink out of that tap? Because he offers Homer a beer, and later on he offers one when they come to kidnap Homer in Joy of Sex, but I don't believe we ever see Ned drink a beer out of that tap.
I guess that's true, but who has a tap in their house and doesn't drink out of it?
Yeah, right.
It doesn't make much sense. And then he also has a comment about how Mo looks, and he says, the drawing of Mo from all angles was fairly off in a way that didn't look intentional. But that is my favorite thing about Mo, is that since he's ugly, they often left drawing mistakes in.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, he's ugly. We'll just make him look ugly, and that's fine, because that's what we want. So I love it when anyone mentions that Mo looks weird. I'm like, yeah, yes, he does. He does look weird.
It's always tough when they show like Mo straight on. Like normally you sort of see him from the side. I feel like he looks even more gargoyle-ish when he's like looking directly at you.
Yes, absolutely.
And they don't like, if you listen to the commentaries, they do not like showing any character straight on because they all, Simpsons, the way Simpsons characters are designed, they look freaky if you look at them straight on eye to eye. Yeah, not much else. You guys can check that out. It's on Google Groups. If you search for alt.tv.simpsons, you'll find it and search through like 25 years of internet nerds complaining. next up, it is time for our listener question of the week. Okay.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow.
KBBL is gonna give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow.
Our listener question of this week is, what is your favorite episode with quote unquote Lisa in the title? And as I expected, a lot of great answers, highly contested among a tight group of like three or four episodes. I think I know Matt's answer, but we'll see. Matt's like, you don't know anything about me. First off, from Twitter, we have The Wanking Dead, at FFConnoisseur84. His answer, Lisa the Iconoclast, funny app, plus the history buff in me, loved it. Rob W. Reggie, Lisa the Iconoclast, #, where's the fife? Stephanie at SMG0014, Lisa the Iconoclast, I have nothing but respect for the Office of Town Crier, but this is beyond your jurisdiction. Sean at ShawnyMac15, Lisa Sachs, the flashback is emotional and comically brilliant, while the scenes with Apu are hysterical. Onto Facebook, we have Sean McGregor, gotta go with Lisa's rival. Great plot with Lisa coming up against an intellectual equal. Great subplot with Homer stealing a truck full of sugar and becoming Tony Montana. Great one-off gag with Bart tipping off the feds and a parody version of Tommy Lee Jones to the location of Milhouse. How somebody can say only ow my glasses after jumping off a dam is beyond me. And lastly, has the best ending line to his episode, My Cat's Breath Smells Like Cat Food. Jordan, while I'm sure that Lisa's substitute will get its fair share of likes, my favorite episode, at least in the title, is Lisa on Ice. This is my favorite episode, maybe ever, of the show. From Ralph's Me Fail English line to Homer chasing that kid with bosoms, I have laughed till I cried many times during this episode. Perhaps the best part of the episode is highlighted in the Bart and Lisa Homer and Pie fight scene. Also highlights the great relationship that Bart and Lisa have with each other that they clearly don't have with Homer, who jumps back from child to child throughout the game and tells the kid, fight for their parents' love. Fight, 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 fight. I threw an extra couple fights in there. We have Connor, Lisa the Vegetarian. This episode is really a lot about what she stands for. It shows she's not going to give in to Homer's pressure. Really sweet episode, especially when she finds out Apu and Paul McCartney are also vegetarians. And who doesn't love Apu's Don't Have a Cow Man t-shirt? Abby, Lisa the Iconoclast. Lisa learns a valuable lesson about how there's no harm in letting people believe something false if it makes them feel good. She didn't come off as a completely self-righteous snob. Plus, this episode makes Homer look like a really good and supportive father. It's true. Brian, also named Bort. There are so many good ones. Lisa's first Malibu Stacy, Lisa's first word, and I Love Lisa all come to mind, but I have to go back to Lisa's substitute. As a teacher, I strive every day to be Mr. Bergstrom. I hope that one day Lisa will finally get the competent full-time teacher that she deserves. Matt, what is your answer?
Well, you probably got me, but I'm definitely going to go with Lisa the Skeptic, because a lot like this episode, I think it struck a great balance of Lisa being the voice of reason, on top of Lisa also having at the very end to give in to her feelings. I really like the end of that episode in particular when, Marge tells her, you were squeezing my hand pretty hard, and Lisa plays it off as, you know, oh, that was so loud. Thanks for squeezing back. That in general is a great episode because you have Homer trying to steal the angel and make a buck off of it in the classic American fashion, but you also have Lisa struggling against the ignorance of the town people, even though it's not really a big deal. She's just, you know, that's one of those instances where it's not a huge deal whether she's right or not, but it's the principle of the thing to her. So it really hits home with me.
Andrew, what is your answer? I don't know if you, I looked ahead of time, but I don't know if you pop one off the top of your head.
No, I planned for this.
Okay.
So I have to say, I think I'm on record as saying that Lisa the Vegetarian is one of the funniest shows the episode ever did. And I love Lisa's Wedding because I think it's a great episode about Lisa's relationship with her family. But the sentimental favorite for me, and I know you guys just talked about it last week, is I Love Lisa. If for no other reason, and it's ground you guys covered, but my wife and I watch that episode together every Valentine's Day. And it's one of those traditions that, I don't know, sticks with me. I think it does a great job of mixing the sweetness and the humor and just sort of the adorableness of like Ralph's crush on Lisa and the Monster Mash and all that other fun stuff that makes it a great episode. So that's my pick.
It's a good answer. Monster Mash is good. Matt, you surprised me. I did not expect you to pick Lisa the Skeptic.
Ooh, what'd you expect?
Lisa substitute.
Oh yeah, it was close. It was definitely in the top three.
I am going with Lisa the Iconoclast.
Nice.
It covers. It's similar to Lisa the Skeptic in certain ways, in that it is also confronting like the stupidity of crowds and like how. But it shows her that I really like episodes where it shows her that being smart isn't necessarily important. Like it doesn't necessarily being right or smart doesn't
being
necessarily,
right. Yeah, not so much being smart, but being right.
But like it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Plus the Fife and the history stuff is also, I love American history. So all that stuff is a lot of fun too. But Lisa's Wedding was my close second. I really like Lisa's Wedding a lot. But yes, tons of great answers from you guys out there. Please keep them coming in. I always love it. I wish I could have had time to read them all. Next week's question. What is your favorite moment from The Simpsons about drinking? I already know Matt's answer, but and I know I'm right this time, but there's a lot of them. There's a lot of drinking in The Simpsons. So
I'm shocked when your main character is an alcoholic.
He just likes a beer from time to time. He just likes toilet beers. Come on, Matt.
He does enjoy it.
Everyone loves toilet beer.
I was going to say, he does enjoy, you know, a glass of port on Christmas morning.
So I will put this question on all our social media, on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, on Twitter, @SimpsonsShowPod, and you can email SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. So try and remember to put it up on our Tumblr, which is SimpsonsShowPod.tumblr.com, but again, I'm not great at remembering everything. Next up, it is time, once again, for our new Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each bring three questions to the table, one easy, one medium, one hard, try and stump one another. And this week we're joined by Andrew, who also has brought his own questions. Now we have a official trivia off. We did this most recently when Kieran Sheehack was on the show. So I'm excited to do it again because we have a third person we can bounce on. We can do some competitions here. So we'll go in order. We can go all our easiums, all our music. Or should we do it all at one person? I think that actually might work better in this case. So yeah, I will start us off. How about that? And you guys can first to the answer. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Sure. We're gonna deal with some Skype delays, but you know, we can do the best. So first, my easy.
Remember, you are not in competition with each other.
We're putting you in direct competition with each other. Fight, fight, fight.
Fight.
What is the name of Duff's official mascot and spokesperson?
Duffman.
Oh, Matt. Too slow, Matt.
Oh.
Too slow. Nerds. Just like in life.
True. Very true.
My medium question. What is the rival beer of Duff often enjoyed in Shelbyville?
Fudd.
Oh, there we go. Matt got it that time. Finally, this is the hard question. I tried to make it. I don't know if any of you guys know this one. When does Duff Beer first appear in the show?
Wow, I have no idea.
Guess a first season episode. You have a 1 in 13 shot.
I know it was first season episode.
What? Take a shot in the dark here and say Call of the Simpsons.
Wrong.
I'm going to say there's No Disgrace Like Home, because that seems like the kind of one that would have it in it.
Nope. That's wrong as well. The answer is our least favorite episode, Homer's Odyssey.
Well, that makes sense, too.
Third episode of the show is first appearance of Duff. Okay. Matt, quiz me and Andrew.
All right.
We're in direct competition.
Today we have a theme. Let's see how you guys do.
Okay.
Your easy question. Actually, I'm not going to be doing it for this because you already asked it. Dang it. let's see. Dang. I really should have been paying more attention to your questions.
Just answer. Ask it anyway, Matt.
Okay. Who is Duff's mascot?
Duffin!
You are correct. Good.
If only I knew the answer to that question.
Okay. Your medium ones you haven't gotten to yet. So,
okay, good.
What sports team does Duff own in Springfield?
The Springfield Isotopes?
You are correct. And as a bonus question, who did they buy the isotopes from?
Albuquerque? Or no, they're moving the team to Albuquerque.
Bought it from Burns, right?
No.
But Burns had the... They named him... I don't know. I don't know then.
They bought it from the Mafia.
Oh!
teams.
Okay. I did not realize. Okay.
Good try, guys. All right, your hard question. This is a pretty tough one, so I'll be impressed if you guys can get this. I've got five guys who have played the role of Duffman. You can name two of them. You can get it right.
Sid and Larry?
Oh, my God. That's not even fair. All right, Robbie, there are three more.
I throw in the towel. Boop. None. Got nothing.
All right, your others were Joel Duffman, Chip Davis, and Barry Duffman.
Okay, it's good. Glad I didn't know any of those. Okay, Andrew, give us your questions. Now, this determines who remains on the show. So
my easy question is, what is the name of the alcohol-free version of Duff the company briefly sells during Prohibition in Springfield?
Duff Zero.
That is correct.
Too quick for me, Matt. I had the answer. I just couldn't get it out.
The medium question. It's one Friday night. Homer feels like trying something new. What beer does Mo offer him, and what does Homer ultimately drink?
Ooh, yeah, he offers him Doof, which is just Duff with two little the umlaut over
red,
the U.
Red Tick beer? Red Tick?
That's
red,
the other one.
Correct.
Yeah. Not enough dog.
doof from Sweden. And your hard question, and I have to admit, I had to look this up in order to ask the question, so there's no shame here. What are the names of the seven Duffs who appear at Duff Gardens?
Surly, Queasy, I can't remember off the top.
Yeah, we've actually had this question, and I still can't remember.
Surly, Wheezy.
Remorseful.
Both correct. Remorseful is one.
Dizzy?
So, Dizzy is one of them. Okay. There are three more.
Oh.
In fairness, I'm not sure their names have been said on the show. I think you just see them in the background.
Yeah, I'm going to tap out on this one, Robbie, if you feel like.
I'm not giving up. I can get it. Three more. Let's see. I'm trying to picture it. No, I can't get it. I'm not going to waste time.
Well, you tried and you failed, and the lesson is never try. The remaining three Duffs are Tipsy, Sleazy, and Edgy.
Okay.
Edgy? Really?
I could have maybe... Sleazy and... I could have maybe gotten Tipsy. I was not going to get Sleazy or Edgy.
Yeah.
That's tough. That is hard. I think I've asked Matt that exact
question. Well, Duff does
take the edge off. That's true. That's true. I generally, we do have some listener questions. We are running long today, so I'm just going to put them off till next week. There's no end to the amount of questions in The Simpsons, so no worries there. If you'd like to submit a theme, though, you can. Just any of our social media I've already mentioned, or submit more questions. I will add them to our list and try and grill whoever, Matt probably, with them.
And I will massively fail.
You do a pretty good job, man. You're generally pretty good. And finally, with no Google Trivia Challenge now over, it is time for our final segment. Segment we end every episode with. It is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is part of the show where Matt and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. I don't know where to put this one. It's kind of a strange thing, a little bit. It's one of the serious, or it's not completely, it's not like dead serious as like Homer's Triple Bypass was.
Right.
But it's still kind of a serious subject, and I mean, it is funny and has great jokes. It has this, you know, to defeat the spider's curse, which I remember for that, I'll remember for the rest of my life. But, give me guidance. Where do we start? Tell me where to start.
I would say in the vein of Homer's Triple Bypass, it is better than Homer's Triple Bypass just because it's funnier and not quite so serious, but not a lot better, I would think.
Okay, trying to think. Colonel Homer. Is it better than Colonel Homer?
I don't think so. I think it's better for D'Angelo and the music on the episode. It's not quite as good as that. Somewhere in between those two, I think.
Andrew, we're pipe in. Give us some suggestions. I don't know. You don't have the list in front of you, probably.
In fact, I do.
Oh, no. Okay. If I've updated it, you have.
So I would say, I think if we're going to put it somewhere between Colonel Homer and Homer's Triple Bypass, I think probably between Camp Krusty and Separate Vocations is right about the spot. Is where I would put it. I think it's a good episode. I think some episodes have a little better balance between the humor and the sort of pathos part to it.
Above Separate Vocations, eh?
I like Separate Vocations. I don't know about that.
Yeah, we're pretty diehard Separate Vocations defenders. It's one of my childhood favorites.
It's a great. I mean, again,
I had it on a VHS. I taped it on VHS, so that's why it's one of the few ones I had to watch over and over and over again before the DVRs. Well, we just watched Brother from the Same Planet.
I think it's definitely better than Brother from the Same Planet and Bart the Murderer, but Separate Vocations.
It's better than Bart the Murderer? I don't know about that.
It's right there with it. That's why I'm looking, like you said, like 17, 18, somewhere in there.
Part the Murder is such a good Goodfellas thing. Such good Godfather and Goodfellas. I love gangster movies, and that's such a good pastiche and reference. So many references and Bart.
It's good, but it's less family focused. Like Bart the Murderer is pretty much just Bart, whereas I feel like Duffless has a great balance of all of the family. You know, it's a little bit of something with everyone.
Well, Maggie's not. She does steal a cupcake, I guess. She does do that.
It's a vital part of the episode.
Yes, it's important.
Vital.
And Stan's little helper gets a cupcake, so hopefully they weren't chocolate.
Okay. I can put it up. How about this? Above Bartha Murder, below Separate Vocations. 18.
That sounds about right.
This is a tricky one. I'm not even confident about this, but I don't know where else to put it. I know I like Separate Vocations more, but the fact that I'm not entirely confident about being better than or worse than Bartha Murderer means we're in the right wheelhouse. I think I'd rather watch this again, Brother from the Same Planet. So
definitely,
even though Phil Hartman as Tom is pretty great. Okay, so there we go. Duffless, number 18, right above Bartha Murder, right below Separate Vocations, Marge vs. the Monorail, A New and Still number 1, only a few weeks old now. Homer's Odyssey, last place, still last place. We actually got a comment today on our Facebook from Abby, a constant listener, great contributor to all our social media, and she is saying that, what episode is it with Armin Tamzarian? What's the name of that episode?
Principal and the Pauper.
Principal and the Pauper?
Yes, Prince and the Pauper, yep.
She's saying that should be the last because of the heretical things that it proposes. Those are my words, not hers, but I'm interested to see when we eventually get to there. We're still ways off from Principal and the Pauper, but I don't know. I like the idea that, you know, we're looking that far ahead already. Let's see. You can find this list on our website. It's simply thesimpsonshow.com. It has this list, all of the links to, you know, social media, to our RSS feed, you know, new episodes, of course, and a link to our Patreon if you just want to click on a button. Again, you can go there and see everything. Let's see. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. MixMasterCereal. Check out my comic book podcast, Handsome Boys Comics Hour. And again, if you'd like to support the show, please go to Patreon, patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow, and can support us and get access to bonus stuff. Andrew, plug all the things you'd like our fans to check out.
Well, first off, I just want to say, Robbie and Matt, thank you very much for having me on the show. This was a lot of fun. For the listeners out there, I would encourage all of them to check out The Andrew Blog, which is my website, which you can find at www.theandrewblog.net. We cover everything in arts and entertainment, but there is a particular Simpsons focus and Simpsons bent to it. I think I've looked at more Simpsons episodes there than anything else. And you can also find me on Twitter at The Andrew Blog. So thank you guys again.
No, absolutely, and I will be including links to you and your website on the show notes for this episode. So if you guys want an easy link, go to the show notes. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a Patreon subscriber. You won't find it.
That's true. I do not. However, since my return to the U.S., I have taken up carrier pigeons. They're somewhat tough to catch, but I'm working on it. I've also written to Mike Tyson for some pointers, and I'm starting to build a large platform on the top of my house for them to land on. So if you want to send them my way, I will probably send them back to you. Probably.
Okay. There you go, guys. Carrier pigeons. Yep. Wow. With that,
they're misunderstood birds, damn it.
With that, I am Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching the episodes.